morning, everybody. Let's go ahead and get started. First of all, I don't know if you all noticed these things here in front of us, but I want to talk about the Bowie Bay Sox did an incredible event for cancer awareness over the weekend, and it was Choose the Bobbleheads. I never thought in a million years I'd be at a ballpark signing my bald head and having a bobblehead baseballs. But it was a great. So I thought maybe the Board of Public Works, we should take a final vote to hair or no hair. But actually, we got to the ballpark, and there's two lines, about 100 yards long, filled with people. And there's a line for hair and a line for no hair. It was back and forth all day long, and finally, hair won by a hair. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Madam Treasurer.
Good morning. Good to be here. Excuse me. My telephone just talked to me. It doesn't do that very often. You didn't quite hear that.
You want to pass it over to the comptroller?
I just want to say it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. I know there is a lot going on in this world around us, and it's good to see some people at work doing their work. And with that, turn it over to the comptroller.
Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you, Madam Treasurer. Can't tell you how great it feels to be here this morning. I got up early and took the train down from Philadelphia to Baltimore, and I got a chance, as I looked out the window at the passing scenery, a lot of it gritty, some of it beautiful when you're crossing the rivers, I just thought about how great our country is, and what a wonderful state, and what a wonderful nation, and how lucky we are to live in it. And I actually, as much as I enjoy my party's convention, I'm much happier back here with the governor and the treasurer rolling up our sleeves and doing things that Marylanders really benefit from. So, long-winded way of saying I'm happy to be back with you. And I will say that the Delaware delegation is in the same hotel as the Maryland delegation. So when I'm introduced as the tax collector, they give me a lot of trash talk. And so my best response I've found is, yeah, but what do you guys think of Ocean City? Oh, we love Ocean City. Oh, we go down there all the time. And so we are announcing, Governor, with your help, the tax-free back-to-school shopping week in August. And I remind them of that there'll be Delaware license plates all up and down the shopping malls. Of course, their response is you should name that Delaware week, not tax-free week. But it's all in good humor, and the state of Maryland is looking good up there, but it's particularly looking good back here, because what we do here is not rhetoric. It's real actions, Governor and Madam Treasurer. And I guess I'll close just by saying, if you ever get that high-speed train going again, and Madam Treasurer, you're a big train supporter.
I am.
And I like Amtrak, but hold on to your bottle of water if you're sitting in a seat, because there's a little bit of sway back and forth. But seriously, high-speed train, count me in if you move forward with that proposal.
Well,
thank you, guys.
Thank you. It is moving forward. We actually have received a $28 million grant from the Federal Department of Transportation. We're the first state to get the grant to do the study and feasibility of the train. And we've had discussions with a Japanese company that's talking about investing up to $8 billion in doing it. So
maybe we could auction off some of these bobbleheads.
Yes. It might work.
Price is going up, I hear. So.
Yeah, actually, during the game, they got the bobbleheads for free when they walked in. They were on eBay for $100 seconds after they got them. So you know, it's going to be a collector's item. It might be worth $1,000 someday. You never know. But let's go ahead.
Governor, I wasn't going to say something, but since the comptroller did, I just have to say this. I think Michelle Obama is wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started with Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Ms. Comptroller. We have 18 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There are 6 reports of emergency procurements. We're prepared to respond to your inquiries.
All right, thank you, Madam Secretary. Before we begin with the agenda, I want to state for the record that I will be recusing myself from voting on item number 7. And I'd like to discuss item 12, if I could.
Okay, item 12, Mr. Prince is here from the Stadium Authority. We have 5 contracts presented to the board. Item 12 through 16.
We have somebody from the school system as well, Baltimore City.
Have you brought anybody from Baltimore City Public Schools?
Yes. Keith Scroggins, the Chief Operating Officer, and Lynette Washington, I believe, are here.
Okay. This item, as I understand it, requests approval for a $38.6 million bid package for the partial demolition and renovation of the Robert Poole School in Baltimore City. Is that correct?
Correct.
And this project is part of the $1 billion Baltimore City 21st Century Schools Initiative?
Yes.
So as part of the agreement between Maryland Stadium Authority and Baltimore City and the IAC, the city is supposed to manage the renovation of the projects, right? And the IAC is supposed to approve these projects.
Originally, the agreement had the city managing the renovations. Now, most of the renovations are being done by being overseen by the Maryland Stadium Authority, as well as all of the replacements. In the first year, the first 11 schools, I believe it's 7 and 4, 7 for MSA and 4 for Baltimore City Public Schools.
Is there a way you could speak up a bit?
Those mics aren't really...
Are they working?
No.
I'm not sure.
They're not turned on, I don't think. I don't know who's in charge of that. But the IAC is supposed to approve these projects at the same time, but separately from the city's normal capital improvement program. My question is, what is the process for ensuring that the 21st century program is aligned with the city's regular capital improvement program? You know, how do we ensure that we aren't spending money on significant projects in buildings that are scheduled to be demolished shortly?
Right.
I ask that question because this particular building, Robert Poole Building, was scheduled to receive $2.2 million in capital improvement funding in 2014 for new windows and doors right before it was about to be demolished. And, it was going to be part of phase one of this program. So fortunately, we caught the oversight, and capital improvement project funds were rescinded for the project. However, in Baltimore City's current plan and their capital improvement plan for FY17, there are 5 more schools which are slated to receive $6 million for significant renovations, but these schools are also scheduled for replacement, renovation, or possible reduction in the upcoming phases of the 21st century program. So how do these systematic renovation projects in the capital improvement plan affect the status of these schools and the plans for them in the 21st century program?
With respect to the second group that you mentioned, the 21st Century Schools program at this point addresses what are called year one and year two schools. So those at this moment would be outside of the program because there's no funding for them. However, if and when funding becomes available for those, any major system improvements that would occur would be addressed in feasibility studies and our own analysis when looking at the project. I also think that we, as a fail-safe, in order to minimize the likelihood of this happening or eliminate the likelihood of this happening, we have significant coordination with the IAC through the MOU. However, we also will be meeting with them to discuss these types of issues to ensure that it doesn't happen.
So the 5 schools that we're talking about, there's not going to be money spent on schools that are about to be torn down?
No, no. Not within these five contracts. And certainly we would not be a proponent of spending any money in a school that's about to be torn down or any new or nearly new system to be removed from a renovated school either.
But my understanding is five schools are getting $6 million, and they are scheduled to potentially be demolished.
These are
in the next couple of phases.
Right. I think the assumption is that there's not funding for those. And certainly if in FY17 those major systems are incorporated, if and when those are addressed through this program or I assume through any other IAC program, the ultimate decision about what to do with the school would be reflective of the new system being in place.
Yes.
Certainly it would be under our, if it were conducted under our supervision.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. Thank you, Governor. So thank you for being here. I have a lot of appreciation for the Stadium Authority and really appreciate the expertise and the professionalism. But we're being asked today to authorize another $106 million in public dollars to the Maryland Stadium Authority for the renovation, expansion, replacement of several schools in Baltimore City. While I don't have any specific issues with the list of the proposed projects in this item, I am looking for assurance that we have the project management team in place to deliver these ambitious projects on time and on budget, and in accordance with the standards that the children and families of Baltimore deserve. And by this, I mean review from your agency, but we're going to get to the school system in a minute because that's where my questions, frankly, tend to end up. The track record on the issue I just mentioned over the years has been less than stellar. Just last year, for example, Dr. David Lever submitted a memorandum to the members of the IAC requesting approval to rescind the approval and funding of six school construction projects in Baltimore City worth a combined total of $10.5 million. In so doing, here's what Dr. Lever had to say, quote, "While each specific project reversion can be justified, in total, the reversion represents a serious misallocation of state funds." Goes on to quote, "Certain conclusions are unavoidable. City schools have insufficient capacity to manage its large capital program. Baltimore City schools have not yet developed the staffing, organizational structure, or procedures that are needed to manage a large-scale capital program. Coordination," going on, quote, "coordination between educational needs and the capital program has been lacking. The annual movement of educational programs has not been well coordinated in the past with facility requirements or a disciplined review of past capital investments." Dr. Lever went on to outline four reform measures that should be adapted by the Baltimore City School System to improve the management of the capital improvement program and put an end to the what I view as inexcusable, and I take it he does also, he called it misallocation. I call it a waste of taxpayer dollars. Number one, he said the system should hire an executive director of facilities, coming up with a plan to improve the management of its facilities. Gee, we're really going back to basics here. Director of facilities. Number two, an adoption of formal written procedures and development of an individual building plan for all of the schools that are not covered by the 21st Century Building Plan. This is not you, obviously. I'm just, you're here, so I do have a few questions. So is the school system represented here today?
Yes.
Can they come forward? Yeah, someone come forward from the Baltimore City school system.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you for being here. So the recommendations of Dr. Lever, have these recommendations been acted upon and put into place
And has the IAC, to your knowledge, followed up appropriately to ensure that the appropriate actions are being undertaken by your school system?
Yes, sir. In fact, I would like to introduce Dr. Lynette Washington. She is our executive director for facilities. In the comprehensive maintenance plan, we have sat down with Dr. Lever and his staff to put together individual plans with respect to all of the buildings in Baltimore City. So we've worked on every issue that Dr. Lever had concerns about.
Well, that's terrific, because he further took issue with the Baltimore City school system stewardship of the capital improvement program, noting that a staggering $120 million of $342 million in state funds has been unspent between fiscal year 2006 and 2014. Here's what Dr. Lever had to say in a relatively recent memorandum to the IAC in 2014. The information, quote, this is from Dr. Lever, who is someone that, frankly, I have some major concerns with anyway, but this is his view and his words. The information on the unexpended balance of allocations correlates with information that shows the city schools take an exceptionally long time to place state-approved projects under contract, to complete the work once it is contracted, and to seek reimbursement within programs such as QSAB. Maintenance concerns have not been incorporated into design decisions. Unnecessary maintenance burdens have been incurred because contractors are released from their obligations before work is fully completed. And building systems that have been installed with state funds have not operated as intended due to poor maintenance or lack of training. So is that figure, $120 million of $342 million, is that correct?
I do not believe that that's correct. I take exception to that. I would like to perhaps talk with Dr. Lever's staff to see where that figure came from. We do not have a backlog of QSAP projects or aging school projects. They've all been completed and approved. I'm really
happy to
loss.
Give you the information, because it's a big chunk of money, and
it's a significant chunk.
And so, thank you. I appreciate the your situation, and I'm glad you've got someone here that can listen to this, because obviously there are a lot of talented people who do everything within the system to provide the kids in Baltimore City with a good education. But the honest fact, according to Dr. Lever, and these are, well, let's just assume the figures are right, because Dr. Lever tends to be, if nothing else, accurate on this. This is a deeply troubled school system that just hasn't made the best possible use with the enormous amount of money that it's been provided through the years. And while I certainly understand that this program that is before us today is different because of the direct involvement of the Maryland Stadium Authority, the fact that there are new players now in the mix, and it adds to me even greater level of complexity to the process of building and renovating schools. And that is highly troubling. The fact that the Stadium Authority cannot carry out the directives of the 21st Century Schools Plan on its own is troubling to me, because obviously they weren't set up to do this. The legislature grabs them as a stable, defensible agency to give these huge amounts of money. For what we need is a highly functioning, high performing city school system to get this all right. So it brings me back to my question: what assurances do we have that the Baltimore City Public Schools has put itself in a position to be an effective partner with the Stadium Authority and to provide the technical and policy expertise that's needed in order to satisfactorily achieve the goals of the 21st Century Plan? Really? Well, I mean, well, so I don't understand you're meeting and working with them, but
Well, first of all, there are two entities in the school system that are working with the Stadium Authority. First of all is our 21st Century office, which is headed by Ms. Mignon Anthony, who's right behind me. Secondly, we do work with the Stadium Authority with respect to the CIP program. Now, for instance, the program that the governor mentioned in terms of Robert Poole, that was a project that was approved in 2012. The program for 21st Century was not approved until 2013. We rescinded the projects, not the stadium, not the IAC. We rescinded them and sent the request to the IAC for their rescission because of the 21st Century program. So we've been working very well with them. We certainly have not had a shortage of projects over the years. I'm amazed that at the figure that you just read. We just received 41 projects just for the last fiscal year. So we are working very diligently and completing our projects. So I would like to take a look at that and talk to Dr. Lever and his staff.
Okay. If the Stadium Authority could help me, do you have a figure on how much money has been allocated to your agency in connection with this program to date? And how many projects have been completed and how many are in the construction phase?
We currently have 3 projects in the construction phase. If these are approved today, we'll have 3 more. So only 6 in construction. We have 5 in design or procurement right now, and that constitutes the year one schools.
And what's the total amount of money that's been allocated to the Maryland Stadium Authority?
Well, it was done within the Act, so we're receiving $20 million a year from the state, city, and city schools. We leveraged that into a first bond issuance in the spring, but we received that money for over 30 years. In terms of the budget for the year one schools, if that's the question,
yeah.
I believe it's just over $500 million.
If I could just ask the school system about a planned closure. I don't mean to get into individual schools, but these folks are pretty upset. This is Northwestern High School. Apparently your system plans to merge that school's population with the school population of a renovated, expanded Forest Park High School, which is their rival, their huge rival. So you're obviously aware this plan is proving to be highly controversial, but the folks that have approached me are very concerned with potential outcomes of this merger. They claim that Northwestern has a completely different curriculum and history and legacy as far as approach to educational programs, and it's not better than Forest Park, it's just completely different. And their concern, and why I think they're so frustrated, is that they believe they're going to lose possibly what Northwestern has, and they were not included in any of the discussions before the actions were announced to them. They feel, maybe wrong, as though they don't have all the details. And I don't want to turn it into a hearing on Northwestern, but I do have to ask, how can your school system make a decision of such magnitude? I mean, this is really, imagine taking your high school and essentially merging it into your rival, and your rival ends up as the school. So obviously it's something that reverberates in those hundreds of families, and I guess, what is the situation? Is there a community forum planned? Are you soliciting public input? And what are we going to do as far as allowing the Northwestern community to make their feelings known to you?
Thank you, Comptroller. I'm Mignon Anthony, the Executive Director for the 21st Century School Programs for the Baltimore City Public School System. As you know, the Memorandum of Understanding for the 21st Century requires us to close 26 schools in order to meet our utilization and in order to ensure that we are properly balancing the use of our schools versus the square footage that we have to upkeep and maintain. The MOU listed Northwestern in 2013. It's in Exhibit 6 as one of the schools that was analyzed to close because of its 43% utilization. There are a number of community forums. We've met with both the Alumni Association and the community more than a dozen times over the last year. We know that there is a confluence of issues when you try to bring two schools and have them co-locate in the same location. And it's a very sensitive issue for the community and one that we take extremely seriously before we even decide that we're going to co-locate two schools. Because of both Forest Park, the school that has to actually move to the Northwestern building, and for the populations of both both of the populations. There are issues associated with everything from athletic teams to bell schedules to the bus transportation. So it's an extremely complex issue. To answer your question, I think that we were trying to be extremely sensitive to the community about the basic closure of the school, and the planning for co-locating the two schools came about in a more hastily fashion in the spring. But there are, you know, every aspect, not just with Northwestern and Forest Park, but we are actually co-locating seven schools, which is 14 schools this summer. So that's not the only school that we have this issue with. So we take very seriously the issue of trying to maintain and engage and keep those various stakeholders and keep them involved. And, you know, we're disappointed. We know that it's difficult for the community when you finally take action on a plan and it's actually finally here, to go through the motions of having to move children and make sure that their culture, their climate, their educational and academic continuity is maintained. And, you know, they're two different schools, but in 2018, they're going to be one school.
Yeah,
and they'll all be in Forest Park.
Okay, that's fine, but mm-hmm. I understand that. But their concerns are twofold. Mm-hmm. Number one, they have a curriculum which is focused on something that is completely different than the curriculum of Forest Park. So you're not just putting two rivals together, which is interesting how you're able to do that, but you're suggesting that the curriculums, I take it, I'm not sure, are you going to teach them the Northwestern curriculum for their kids and the Forest Park curriculum for their kids?
Well, I'm not the academic specialist for the city school system. I know I'm probably what they're referring to is the fact that Forest Park has a number of career technology programs like culinary arts and automotive and those types of things. And actually those programs will be co-locating at a school that specializes in those areas. The core curriculum of the school is, again, I can't speak for it, but I do know that they will be treated as two separate academic programs this upcoming year, and the school facility has been configured to support that. And then after the board closes, does the official closure of Northwestern in December, next year they will be one school, and they will be one curriculum. And they will, so all of the planning for that is in place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that brings me to my real question, which is you claim that there's been community outreach. They claim this is what they've gotten, zero, no community forum, no public input. It's all just come on in and we're going to tell you what we're going to do.
I'm sorry they
feel
that way.
And if you want to get up and express, I guess I'm assuming here, if you want to express how upset you are, you can do it till you're blue in the face. Mm-hmm. But this is what we're doing. So that's not what they want. They want to have their input. As, you know, these are people that often, they don't even have, their kids have left the school. But they feel so invested in the legacy of the school.
They
say specifically there's no community forum and there's no public input that's been solicited.
And that's incorrect, Comptroller.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Say there's a big gap between what they say and what you say. So
yes,
maybe you could go back and suggest that there be a community forum with some real public input about what's going on. And instead of telling people what you're going to do, solicit from them what their concerns are. It doesn't hurt, even when they're upset. Because, you know, if you ask people why they're upset, sometimes that's a helpful exercise. So I would strongly urge you to, whoever's in charge of the outreach, go back and have a community forum and specifically say, hey, we need your input. And anyway, I got off in the weeds there, Governor. I'm sorry, but...
It's all that time up in Philadelphia here.
Yeah. Yeah, I got all those Bernie Sanders people got me all cheered up. Yeah. But you know what I mean. They are upset. So if you could communicate to whoever's important and can make a new community outreach, I would be grateful because they're not happy.
Conversation.
Sure.
Could I just say I hear you and what you have said, and maybe you could send to us the schedule of all of the public meetings and forums that you have all had.
Absolutely.
But what I would also like to say is that I recognize this is one of the toughest parts of our new project. Closing and merging schools is an absolutely essential part of being able to run an efficient school system and be able to have the range of programs that you can't have in a small, underutilized school, and to have the good building that you can't have when you have a number of underutilized schools. So this is very tough. We went through this in Montgomery County. No one likes changing school boundaries. It's not much fun, but what you get out of it are better schools, a better educated student body, and more effective teaching. So I commend you for doing this very hard work. And the Baltimore City School Board, which has to make, after all, the first the decisions in this. It's taken a while, but this is an absolutely essential part of building the 21st century school system. Governor, I see the chairman of the Baltimore City Senate delegation standing with us, who I know has been involved in this from the beginning, and I would like to just ask if he had anything he wanted to add to the conversation.
Don't go away, though. I have another question.
Thank you, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Governor, Mr. Comptroller. Thank you so much for giving me just a brief moment to speak. Really, I just want to say thank you. You know, we have two of the schools that are up for approval today are in my district, in the 46th district. One of them specifically is Arundel Elementary School in the Cherry Hill community. This is a community that has been disinvested for over 40 years. Last week, you may have seen, we just announced a major deal with Sagamore with the development of Port Covington, which will be investing significant resources into this community. One of the key components that drove this project was the new development of Arundel Elementary School in Cherry Hill, where there will be one pathway for all kids in Cherry Hill. It is a historic moment, and your approval today for that measure is essential to the future for Baltimore. So I want to thank you for your work, and just want to echo the treasurer's point that the 21st century building plan is unbelievably complex. There is no district across the entire country that is building 25 schools in the midst of closing nearly 20 others. The logistics of the three-dimensional chess that takes to get all of these pieces together is Herculean. You know, I have been critical of the Baltimore City school system, as many know, but it's because I believe so deeply in the power of what they can do. And I know that the folks that are standing behind me are truly representative of the power that comes from the investment in people in Baltimore. And I thank them, and I thank you for your ongoing commitment to this work. So thank you very
Senator.
Much.
Did you say you had some other questions?
No, I just have a question for the system, which is, well, I mentioned I was up in Philadelphia. The city has obviously been, you know, it's a little bit like Baltimore, but it's got a gritty kind of feel to it, but it's the maintenance is unbelievable, maybe just because everybody's coming to town, but it's noticeable, and it makes a very positive impression. So when I read Dr. Lieber's quotes from not too long ago that state funds have not been operated as intended due to poor maintenance, a lack of training, I guess I'm just beating a dead horse here, but maintenance is, appreciate the senator's advocacy and the legislature and everybody putting all this money in. Do we have, with an added layer of complexity, and the system is being asked to do things that it historically has not been able to do, which is take care of what you have?
Well, I think a lot of what Dr. Lieber was concerned about, and I was involved with the negotiations as we were putting together the program with 21st Century, was that the budget for maintenance was cut every year. It's been 8 consecutive years of budget cuts for maintenance. There was, in a report that Dr. Lieber put together, there was a shortage of the number of employees, which has been corrected because in the last 2 years, the agreement to add $3 million to the maintenance budget for 9 consecutive years is a way of restoring maintenance to the level where it should be in order to maintain not only the current building stock that we have, but also the new buildings that are constructed through the 21st century. So we've also been sitting down with Dr. Lieber's staff to go over the comprehensive maintenance plan that was put together and approved, to ensure that there is an individual plan for each of those buildings and that all of the buildings are maintained appropriately according to state procedures and regulations.
Okay, and if you could get back as to why Dr. Lieber's staggering $120 million out of 300 plus has been unspent between fiscal year 2006 and 2014, I'd be grateful.
I will certainly provide you with that information, but I can say that it flies in the face of significant state investment to Baltimore City each year through the CIP, with $36 million in the last one, $42 million. I mean, we've not suffered a shortage of approved projects, so I'm just a little surprised by the staggering number.
Oh, maybe you can get back in writing.
Yes, sir.
Can I just, it sounds like you finally are putting in place, and I appreciate it, because it's been a long-term problem, the maintenance of the individual schools, the plans for maintenance of individual schools. How are you then overseeing to make sure that the maintenance is done? I mean, the plans are a very good thing. What are the indices of accomplishment, the gauges of success?
Well, we'll be presenting that information through our comprehensive maintenance plan as we are hiring more people, as we are making sure that all of the projects that we're putting in significantly more preventive maintenance inspections.
But, I mean, is somebody then from your office going in to see that, in fact, it's being done?
Yes, and we've actually created a preventive maintenance staff to go through to make sure that all of that work is being done. Those are things that were not done before, positions that were eliminated over the years.
Right. No, I understand the problems, but now that you've got the plan in place, there has to be a way of measuring, in fact, the accomplishment.
Yes. Right, and that's what the comprehensive maintenance plan does, and it provides you a yearly report on the progress that we're able to make.
That's excellent. Look forward to seeing it and seeing how maybe it can be integrated with the state maintenance inspections. And I assume the other inspections of the schools are taken on by the city as opposed to the schools?
If you're talking about fire extinguishers, no, ma'am, we also
you do that.
Conduct that ourselves.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being here today and for all of your efforts to make improvements in the city school system. We're going to continue to monitor very closely just to make sure that everybody's living up to their obligations and responsibilities. It's with a lot of state investment, so I want to thank you. Thank you for answering all the questions. I am going to try to follow up on that issue I started the discussion with about making sure we don't spend $6 million on schools that we're going to tear down shortly.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? So we have to do a separate motion, I guess.
Well, we'll just say that you're abstaining from item 7.
Okay.
A motion on the whole agenda.
A motion on the whole agenda is our motion.
Okay. So I move that the agenda, that the I move approval.
Yes. Second.
3-0.
3-0 accepts item 7.
Except item 2 is 2-0.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. We're going to move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Thank you, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 15 items on our real property agenda for your consideration this morning.
Any questions on the DNR agenda?
Do you have a written plan for... just a statement. I'm sure you do. About the use of the timberlands. I mean, how, in terms, I'm thinking again about climate change and all the argument about the use of carbon absorption properties.
Yes, ma'am.
How this all works together.
Yes, ma'am. We can provide that for you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Is there a motion on the DNR agenda?
Favorable.
Second. 3-0. We move on to DBM.
Governor, Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, David Brinkley, Secretary of Department of Budget and Management. We have 13 items for today's agenda, and I have representatives here to address any concerns or questions you may have.
Any questions on DBM?
Yes, item 12. This is a $50,000 payment as part of a settlement for the estate of a young Frostburg State University football player who tragically died as a result of head injuries sustained on the football field. And the lawsuit was filed by the student's estate, alleged that he was forced to continue practicing in spite of having received a concussion, which was sustained as a result of dozens of helmet-to-helmet contacts, even after telling his coaches that he didn't feel right. And I take it there are lots of other people contributing to the settlement. The coaches, I believe, the university. Is this the total settlement, or is there are other people chipping in on this?
No, Mr. Controller. John Cushno, Office of the Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General. This was a total settlement involving all the parties. In addition to the three individuals who were represented by myself, the Office of the Attorney General. There is the NCAA, the helmet manufacturer of the football helmet that Mr. Shealy was wearing, and the helmet distributor. And there's financial payments on behalf of each of those other parties.
Well, that's good. Because, I take it it's more than $50,000 for the loss of...
No, it's significantly more.
Good. Thank you. I won't go into that. I take it it's maybe proprietary or something, but I'm delighted to hear that. What has the institution, Mr. Secretary, done to eliminate these kinds of highly dangerous drills? And I take it these coaches are no longer with the program, or are they?
No, the coaches are no longer there. I would say first, Mr. Controller, that the version of events that you are reading is the plaintiff's version of events. The version of events from the coaches is much different. There was significant testimony in discovery in the case that greatly disputes that version of events and disagrees with the allegations that there were helmet-to-helmet hits on numerous occasions and that this occurred. It was certainly a disputed issue of fact. But that being said, the university continues to be very sensitive to the area of concussions and head injuries. It has developed and had at the time of this accident a concussion management plan, which is something that the NCAA requires. That's updated every year. It's updated every year with any best practices. They also have added a
session every year with the team physician to actually talk to the coaches, the athletic staff, to also bring them up to date and educate them on concussions and injuries. There's a trainer on the field during practice. There's a specific session with the athletes prior to them going into training camp. There's written materials posted in the locker room and gone over with the athletes beforehand. There's a video shown to them. There's a personal session with the athletic trainer that explains the consequences and the hazards of this. There is a form that each athlete has to sign every year that specifically talks about the dangers of concussions and head injuries and the realm of consequences that has occurred. And an athlete can't go on the field unless he executes that and reads it. There's warnings placed in the locker room to that effect. There's also significant sessions during the season. So all those things are being done. It was certainly a tragic accident, Mr. Shealy made a significant impact on Frostburg, and he continues to, because there are certain steps being taken to still memorialize him. And obviously, the university is very sorry this occurred, but we hope that some of these steps can avoid any future tragedies.
Thank you. That's very reassuring, and the safety protocols you mentioned certainly, I think, validate maybe not all the plaintiff's concerns, but something obviously was not in place that perhaps the litany of things that you mentioned can continue to be reviewed. I applaud that. You're the attorney of record, or the...
Yes.
Good. If you could keep an eye on it, because that's a lot of progress that you just articulated.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions on the DVM agenda?
I have one other. Item 13.
I think it's Mike Poterala. I'll let you handle that. General counsel for the College Park.
Good morning. For the record, this is Mike Poterala. I'm the Vice President General Counsel at the University of Maryland College Park. I've been in the state since January 2015, my first appearance here. And pleasure to be with you all this morning. Mr. Comptroller, thank you for the nice welcome note that you had waiting for me at my desk when I got here.
I signed it personally.
I could tell.
No robo letters.
I could tell. Thank you.
We're pleased to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So we're here asking for approval of a settlement of a federal lawsuit that's been pending for 3 years in alleging violations of the American with Disabilities Act. Just our campus, the plaintiffs were the National Association for the Deaf and three deaf or hard of hearing individuals. So the request today is for a total of $315,000 to settle all claims.
Okay, so I understand the issue here, which is that folks that have are asking that the live captioning, they want live captioning of all PA system announcements at events at Byrd Stadium, or is it still Byrd Stadium?
Maryland Stadium now.
What is it?
It's Maryland Stadium.
Maryland Stadium and the Comcast Center. So all the PA announcements that come over, they want to have closed captioning up on the scoreboard, which I can see. My concern here is that does this settlement where they are taking care of as far as University of Maryland College Park, does this open ourselves up to further lawsuits of this nature? For example, Towson and Salisbury University and other folks, is everybody going to get hit with live captioning at Seagull Stadium? And
I'm going to defer to the
office. How far down does this thing go?
I need to defer to the office of the Attorney General to answer that for other entities that are not part of the lawsuit.
Good morning. My name is Eric Delfoss. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Education and Affairs Division. In direct answer to your question, Mr. Comptroller, no. The settlement won't really have any effect on them other than to impose, we have the same burdens we will always have, which is to create, make sure that we are accommodating and providing reasonable accommodations for each individual when requests are made. Because the schools vary in the various athletic venues, from the rollaway bleachers at UMBC to the stadium that we are, Maryland Stadium, and it's 50,000 plus seats. The law in this matter is very clear that each individual athletic event or athletic venue has to be seen, and reasonable accommodations need to be taken in light of what is what the athletic venue is. So it's not, this does not impose a captioning element on necessarily on every university stadium that we have.
Yeah, okay. So you understand the concern that
absolutely,
all of a sudden we have a lot of these things appearing, and
right,
some of these institutions, you know, obviously at some point it's I don't quite know where it ends, I guess.
Well, each institution, I can assure you, has, within the university system, is taking steps and is aware of this issue and is out in front,
okay,
and taking care of the, you know, making sure that they have contingency plans for any type of request for accommodations as might be necessary. These particular plaintiffs and these particular National Association of the Deaf have actually been targeting larger schools. It's not like they're like lining up the Maryland schools. They have actually started initiated a lawsuit in Connecticut against Harvard and MIT. So those are the type of plaintiffs that are defendants that they're going after. It's not likely that Bowie State's high on their radar.
Okay, because it's a settlement. It's not a
correct
court case.
Correct. Correct. We are continuing with the existing law, which creates a lot of flexibility for the schools.
Thank you, Governor.
Could I, yeah, Peter, but hearing all you've said, does your office or the system office actually know what the plans and actions of each of the campuses are and checks that, understanding it has to be appropriate to each campus, that
correct,
in fact it is?
We are, that is part of the review we are doing and ongoing, because the short answer is yes, our office has made, I personally have made contact with each of the various universities to make sure, and we are having those types of communications within our office and without or through the university system, to make sure that everyone has got these ADA issues on their board and they are taking appropriate steps to stay in front of them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on DBM? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second? 3-0. Now we're going to move on to the university system agenda.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 5 items on the agenda. Item 5, RFP, was revised. Here to answer any questions.
Any questions? No questions?
No questions.
Motion?
Move approval.
Easy one, Jeff.
Thank you.
3-0.
Mr. Evans, could I just...
Luckily, we already voted, so...
This is just a message for you to bring home. We last night received extensive explanation of the number 5, of the university's thinking, the background, et cetera. If that had come earlier, or if that were attached to the item, it probably would have saved a huge amount of time and effort. Thank you.
I'll pass on. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Information technology.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Luis Estrada, the Deputy Secretary for the Department of Information Technology. We have 5 items on the agenda today, and we're withdrawing 1 IT, and we have representatives to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Move
there a motion? All right. Motion carries 3-0. We're going to move on to Department of Transportation agenda. And Mr. Ports, before we get started, I have some very good news to announce here on the transportation front. Just last night, we got the notification from the federal government that we've received a $10 million Tiger grant to help us with some parts of our Baltimore Link Transit program. And that's pretty exciting news, and I see Mr. Comfort here. We're going to talk with him in a minute, but go ahead and run through the items on the agenda.
Sure. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Governor, for the record, good morning. My name is Jim Quartz, Deputy Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. Maryland Department of Transportation has 21 items today for your consideration, and I'd be more than happy to talk more about the Tiger Grant.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about or point out item 20. Paul, you want to come forward? Paul Comfort.
While he's coming to the microphone, Mr. Governor, I just want to also thank you for the investment. You mentioned it's a $10 million investment from the federal government. It's almost $15 million from you through the Department of Transportation for this project to enhance the East-West Corridor up North Avenue. And it's going to be a significant investment to increase economic activity throughout Baltimore through multimodal investments.
It's a great part of the overall, you know, Baltimore Link project, you know, putting $135 million into the city to transform the transit system. And I want to congratulate you on all the work so far, Mr. Comfort. This item 20 is a modification to add additional trips on MTA's 310, 320 commuter bus route between Columbia and Johns Hopkins. In Baltimore, which will help support our Baltimore Link initiative. It's my understanding that this is one of our most popular routes, and that adding these extra trips as part of our original Baltimore Link proposal received really strong support during your outreach meetings and hearings. Is that true?
Yes, it is, Mr. Governor and Mr. Comptroller and Madam Treasurer. Great to be with you. I'm Paul Comfort. Yes, Governor, we're real excited to bring this to you today. As you know, the Baltimore Link Plan is a plan to transform transit in the Baltimore region. We started out a few weeks ago with the Express Link routes, which are kind of around the city, which allows suburb-to-suburb transportation. This is one of our commuter routes allowing people to get from the city out to jobs in the suburbs, and vice versa, coming in. So we're real excited that we can extend our commuter bus routes. This is one of three that are going to take place. Another one's going to go from Baltimore to Aberdeen, getting folks from Baltimore to jobs in the Aberdeen area, and another down from Baltimore through BWI down to Annapolis and Kent Island for jobs there and back into the city. So these are expansion of commuter routes that really will help folks get to employment centers.
Well, thank you very much, you and your team, for a job well done. And I think we're all looking forward to getting to a final Baltimore Link plan as we try to dramatically improve the transit system in Baltimore City and throughout the Baltimore region. So I just wanted to give you a shout out and say thank you for the efforts.
Thank you. We're real excited. We had the Comptroller come and visit us last week. He got to tour our metro system. It was a pleasure to have him with us. Thank you again, Mr. Comptroller, for coming there. And it was even just having you kind of meet the employees and all, that meant a lot to them. So I really appreciate you coming out.
You didn't let him drive a bus, did you?
Yeah, but I do want to thank Mr. Comfort because it was a very impressive tour, and in the legislature I was constantly dealing with the paratransit situation, which was terrible back then. You've cleaned it up a lot, and you know, give credit where credit's due. The charts and the accountability that you represent, Mr. Comfort, frankly, should be evident in every agency, including my own. And thank you for, it's fact-based. You've got the information and the data to show that you're fixing the paratransit program, but you're also moving forward to improve the rail system in Baltimore. And I don't think people understand this item that we're voting on today. This is mostly for people from Baltimore that want to get on a bus and go to a job in Columbia. That's what's really innovative here. Mm-hmm. And how do you attribute that situation where it is somewhat surprising because, frankly to me, because the impression is people want to come in from the suburbs and work in the city and then get the heck out. Well, that's maybe not what the trend is.
Right? We're actually, these two routes, it's 310 and 320, one comes into the city and one goes out of the city. So it's both ways, like you said. Folks coming in for some jobs, we were able to extend some of our existing service recently on the express routes all the way out to Harbor East at the request of some folks out there, because Exelon and others are bringing a lot of jobs there. But we also want to provide an opportunity for folks to get the jobs outside of the city. And the Baltimore Link plan, not just this, this is just the beginning, as the governor mentioned. There's a lot more exciting things coming. We're working with Baltimore City on the bus-only lanes, transit signal priority. And we are working to hold people accountable, as the comptroller said. I'll call your attention to one of the other contracts before you today, which is the light rail vehicle car cleaning contract. That's with Alliance, one of the preferred vendors for the state. They've never had liquidated damages in their contract. Well, guess what they've got this time? We're going to hold them accountable to make sure they do the work that they're being paid to do for the citizens of Maryland under the leadership of Governor Hogan. And so that's the kind of new thinking we're bringing to the MTA and Maryland Department of Transportation.
No, thank you very much.
So if I could just ask, are you planning this kind of expansion, for example, to Anne Arundel?
Yes, we are. Yes, sir. One of the other commuter routes that we're going to be adding in around the same time this is from Baltimore City down to Annapolis and over to Kent Island and back.
And have you experienced an increase in this commuter bus ridership, possibly attributable to WMATA's problems? Do you see any linkage there, or is that, are they increasing ridership because you're doing a good job separate from them?
As part of their shutdowns for some safety improvements, we've seen an increase in ridership on our MARC train service by 2,000 passengers a day. So we've worked, our deputy administrator, Suhair Al-Khatib, has worked closely with WMATA to make sure that the Maryland residents are taken care of.
Okay, and then final question. What are you doing to communicate with Baltimore County and Anne Arundel County that they need to get serious as far as some suburban bus systems?
Well, we meet regularly with them. I just went down and had an open meeting with the Anne Arundel County Council last week. One council member came and several other staff people came. We talked about the role of MTA with them. We work regularly with some members of the county council in Baltimore County as well, and they're proposing things such as a Towson circulator, et cetera. Not sure if they're going to get the local funding they need to make that happen, but there is some discussions going on.
Well, that's encouraging, but there's a lot of talk over there as far as transit and what needs to be done. Here's a suggestion: Baltimore County step up and get a ride-on system and do what Prince George's and Montgomery have done. And this transit situation. You described to me what you told me when I was out there about the square. You're redesigning all the bus routes.
Yes, sir. Right, so the existing bus routes in Baltimore City, the reason they don't work is because the model and the routes were laid out 50 years ago, before Baltimore was the fifth most congested city in America. So once all the routes went to downtown Baltimore in the Central Business District on the four main streets there, Pratt, Fayette, Lombard, and Baltimore. And that's not where – there's 145,000 jobs in downtown Baltimore, but there's 745,000 jobs around the Baltimore region. So we've got to – we're opening the grid. We're providing suburban-to-suburban access, like you said. If you were in White Marsh and you wanted to go to Towson, under the old system, you had to go downtown, switch buses, come back up. A 90-minute trip. People aren't going to do that. The new one cuts that time in half. So we definitely are providing services for the entire core service area, which is Baltimore County, Baltimore City, Anne Arundel. But as you mentioned, they don't make any contributions to the service. This is fully funded by the state of Maryland and by the people who pay the fares.
And I was introduced to the number one employee. He's a gentleman that's worked, I believe, 50 years or something.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And he validated that. He said nothing's changed in 50 years. Yeah. So he was happy with the positive news that you were actually reforming
a system that
obviously needs some update.
And we're hoping you all...
Our team's only been here 18 months.
And we're hoping you all will help us carry the message. So if we may approach the bench, we brought each of you a Baltimore Link shirt that maybe you can wear if you'd like. Wow. So, Jim, you want to take
very
them up?
Cool.
And, Your Honor, may we approach the bench? There you go.
Yes.
It's a Baltimore Link shirt
thank
and a pin that you can wear and help advertise what we're trying to do to help improve the transit
very
system
cool.
in the Baltimore region. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Governor, if I may, I would be remiss if we didn't talk about. Madam Treasurer started this meeting talking about the great employees that we have working for state government, and I'm going to tell you something. Kevin Quinn, who has been leading this effort along under Paul Comfort's leadership and, of course, Secretary Ron's leadership at MDOT, is without a doubt one of the most professional, best employees the state has ever seen, and he is literally leading this transformation in the Baltimore Link, and, and I'll tell you, he definitely needs a shout-out.
Yeah, absolutely. He's not here, is he?
No, he's in a crunch.
He's
well, I hope he is. Incredible employee.
I've been very impressed with him. Yeah. Well, thank you. Your whole team's doing a great job.
Sure, thank
you. Any other questions on the MDOT agenda? And is there a motion?
Favorable.
Second, third, 3-0. Now we're going to move on, last but not least, to our newest cabinet secretary, the secretary of DGS, Ellington Churchill, for his first meeting here as secretary. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Ellington Churchill, Secretary for General Services. The department has 22 items on the agenda today. We are withdrawing item 8LL and 9LL, and we are glad to answer any questions.
Any questions on DGS? Easy first day? Oh, no.
No, not a question. I just wanted to congratulate the Columbia Arts and Cultural Commission for the $2 million grant for the Meriwether Post Pavilion. Ian Kennedy, I see, is in the audience. I believe, is Mr. Mariano involved with you? Yeah, you've got some heavy artillery there. And is Brad here? Brad Canfield? So thank you for the... Oh, good. Terrific. Thank you all for being here. And that's an iconic facility in the state of Maryland. And I'm very happy that, Governor, you and the legislature are moving this money over to them and modernizing in a very tasteful way. Heck, we'll have Paul Simon there after you finish.
I had a lot of fun at the Zach Brown concert there. I'd rather see him than Simon.
Okay. Whatever you want. But seriously, it's a great project, and you should be very proud. I know Howard County is, but frankly, the state of Maryland is, for what you've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, thank you very much. So is there any other questions on DGS? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Sure.
3-0. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.